Paul, thank you for the invitation. I'm excited, nervous, as you should be. I'll make an introduction to poetry by reciting a poem that I've written in my memoir. And it's a reflection of my mother back in the early days. She was a bitch for giving out. Moat. Wash your face and hands, polish your shoes, tuck your shirt and just hang loose. Comb your hair, straighten up, don't be a cheeky little pup. Come here, she'd say, I have to check your head. In the same breath, giving out about dirty washing under my bed. For simple things, she'd cause a scene. But as I got older, I realized she was doing her best to keep 10 children clean. To build a home, to keep us warm. It wasn't easy for her to rise each morn to a nest of hunger, foraging for food. What's for breakfast, bread and jam, a bowl of porridge? Thank you, ma'am. Mind your brothers and sisters, I'm going to town. And then she'd give me a dressing down. Do not turn on the gas, leave the fire screen alone. Under no circumstances are you to leave your brothers and sisters on their own. Do not to fiddle with the radio, your father will give out. Moat. Do not open the front door or go outside. Down the avenue her bicycle she would ride. Basket in front, carrier behind. As a child, I remembered what was going through her mind. She would return with the shopping, little but large. As poor as we were, we never used marge. Go easy on the butter, my mother would say. There's another day tomorrow. I've already pawned your father's suit. There's no more I can borrow. I'd reach for the butter under a watchful eye and spread it as good as I could. But no matter how hard I scraped it on, I always took more than I should. Your eyes are bigger than your belly, she'd say. Don't you know money is scarce? But my my jawbones were working overtime as I was stuffing my face. Now this slice pan wasn't around, 'twas cottage sliced up in a plate, and when it was fresh with plenty of butter, by God, 'twas lovely to eat. But a pound of butter was 1 and 9. Now a pound was seldom seen. 2 ounces or a quarter we bought off Junior Keen. The sugar, milk and bread you'd get for 2 and 6. Sometimes you'd get it on the book off of Mrs. Spitz. But don't forget the eye buns, the breast buns and the tails. Matty Connery was the man to throw them on the scales. Go easy on the butter, my mother would say. There's another day tomorrow. I've already pawned your father's suit. There's no more I can borrow. Drink your cocoa, go to bed. I wondered what went through her head. Moat. That's what love was all about. This is a little trilogy of poems. I didn't write them all as a trilogy. I just wrote them down through the years and then put them together. And they're called Three Stooges. Drink, gambling, and smoking. So the first one is gambling. The first one was gambling, because I can't remember the start of it. Second one, cigarettes. First one is cigarettes. Can't remember that either. First one is drink. The crossroads. I get back to that. This is a little poem, and it's called Discrimination. Can you imagine the population of the world being white for 1 minute? Can you imagine the population of the globe being black for a day? Discrimination, the bird of prey. Hovering over the upstairs, downstairs, colour and creed, the underprivileged people in need. A coloured vibration, the pigmentation of the mind, infected by idle thoughts, a dishonourable imagination. I married a girl, a black girl, when the fields were green and the skies were blue, and I believed in God when I said I do. Things didn't work out, but I haven't changed that much. Love is still blind and marriage an eye-opener, as it should be. And babies are born the same way. There is no discrimination of pigmentation in my garden. The roots of my flowers cling to the same clay and blossom together. They celebrate when the sun comes out. A unification of colour, dancing in unison in a soft summer breeze. I was married to a girl, the black girl. When the skies were blue and the fields were green, and in my heart I had a dream. Things didn't work out, but they haven't changed that much. I'm still friends with my ex-wife, and we share our thoughts with our children. There is no discrimination or pigmentation hanging over my roof. I still see black as beautiful. Without it, how would we distinguish the color white? How would we distinguish day from night? And how would the stars shine? I kind of get jealous at times of poets, established poets, who actually read bad poems and get praise from them. I don't know if any of you ever get that feeling. But I picked on Seamus Heaney. May he rest in peace. I'm not driving home tonight, so Seamus, I'm okay.
Take a look over your shoulder there.
I know. I saw you earlier. Jealous of Seamus Heaney, the pauper and the prince. My scribbles and my thoughts are no different than those that cross the mind of Mr. Seamus Heaney. Naturally in a different context, through circumstance. My world being as far apart from his as it was near. His education was from boarding school to university. Mine was from primary to Jackson's pawn shop. Two completely different tributaries, one leading to fame, the other to an unknown name, both heading for the same reservoir. I was looking at the cooking apples hanging from their branches overhead the galvanized roof on Tommy Cassidy's shed when hearing the sad news of the passing of one of Ireland's most famed. Like Mr. Heaney's poetry, the branches on the tree never cease to amaze me, flourishing year in, year out. Its trunk that branched its sperm is hidden from view, getting no praise or credit for producing the finest of cooking apples to bake or to stew. Unlike Seamus, who soaked up all the applause for his simplicity. I wonder, would he have agreed with me when I say that there are no poets, there never was, only interpreters plagiarizing works already submitted by the universe. A practice he himself was good at, digging out the potatoes, cutting the turf, watching his mother bake during the midterm break. He learned his trade. I lived mine. I'm still trying to think of the trilogy. I rely on these for a while anyway. Watching television on the station where you have the war, the First World War, the Second World War, and what have you, go back in the 1914 and 1945 and all that, you can't help but feel sad and sorry about those soldiers. And so I had to write this watching it actually, and it's called A Quilt of Red Snow. No one was to know how I had befriended the foe on my deathbed. We swapped photographs of our families and talked about Christmas on a quilt of red snow. I don't want to die, he whispered under his breath. I don't want to die. I don't want to die alone, he said. I responded with, neither do I. Neither do I. We both shed a tear, shook hands, apologized for having been tricked into hating each other, for having been forced into killing each other. Our frozen bodies carelessly carted onto a cascade of broken bones. Never walk on a dead man's grave. 'Tis only the brave that die young, and medals of honour are pinned on the chest of those that were forced into using a lifeless torso for cover. Now, having been reborn again, I can rub shoulders with dead soldiers. I can see a regiment of young soldiers with fixed bayonets thrust into the realization of uncertainty when hearing the command, "Over the top! Over the top!" I can hear them whispering to each other, "I don't want to die. I don't want to die alone." Cries of heartfelt pain, tears of sorrow as their loved ones watch the telegram boy close the gate behind him, the family pet snapping at his heels for being the bearer of such sad news. Don't shoot a messenger. He's one of our own. He's one of our own. I'm actually having a slap at the younger generation of today on this, but more or less I suppose the government in a sense. Bleeding indignation. I might have to read between the lines this morning. Why do I feel that I have to prove something to somebody with feelings of dismay? Is it because of my ancestral inheritance of bleeding indignation that makes me feel inferior? Why am I tormented with the need to prove my innocence with truancy as my alibi? Is it because of this, my absence, that I feel guilty? Or maybe it's because I long to be there, holding a bayonet in one hand and a tricolour in the other. At least Britain had World War I and II to keep their nation in conversation for 100 years. What have we? Only a flag of neutrality. Making couch potatoes out of our young soldiers. They will never learn how to die eating burgers and apple pie. They will never feel blisters on the soles of their feet walking on the sun-soaked beaches of Crete. I would rather die fighting for something worthwhile and give my grandchildren something to talk about. Even if only my demise. It might bring tears to their eyes and wash away the mascara that blinds them. Why do I have to open somebody else's eyes before I can see? Why do I dream of my bed as a bunker of recession and my pillars as sandbags pierced with bullets of idleness? My blankets soaked with my ancestral inheritance of bleeding indignation. Maybe it's all in my imagination, animated by my true feelings. Is it possible that my dreams are an opaque silhouette of the inevitable? Hopefully, they're just hopeless dreams that will never materialize. Now, we all have politicians that we love to hate. And in Limerick, we have one man, his name is Willie O'Dea. We love to hate him. So, there was a mannequin politician named O'Dea. He was placed on a Taoiseach's knee. He thought everything grand until he felt Enda's hand. It was then he released his wee-wee. Just to waste a bit of time. There was an angel with extra large wings who was noted for having some flings. He propositioned Our Lady, went away with a fairy. Now they talk about very small things. Actually, I wrote, and when I wrote this, actually, Ed O'Dwyer came into my mind. I don't know if any of you remember Ed O'Dwyer's
poet.
Ed came to the White House as a very young man, and he actually started to write reciting love poems, and they were actually fantastic poems, and he still is a fantastic poet to this day. But the poems he was actually reciting back when he came in first, I just couldn't believe that he had been through that phase of life, me being an older man, of course. And I haven't been through that phase of life, so I don't know. But this is actually a poem, and actually I kind of dedicated this to Ed afterwards. Tears that refuse to turn to teardrops. If I were to talk about love, would I still want to whisper sweet nothings and float on a cloud that once existed, if only in a dream? Would I still see the flowers in their true colors and smell their sweet fragrance that still linger in the entrails of my nostrils? Would the end of each day come too soon, forcing me to sleep with my dreams away from reality? Or will I wake in fear of you telling me that my cloud is no more and the flowers have faded? If I were to talk about love, would I want to warn you of feelings that would take the sight from my eyes and make your heart beat faster? Knowing that my words will fall on deaf ears, ears that will hear nothing, only what they want to hear. Would I dare tell you of the consequences of a broken heart soaked in tears, tears that refuse to turn to teardrops, forcing the heart to swim to safety? If I were to talk about love, would I want to talk about distance? Knowing when we were together, we were miles apart, and when we were miles apart, we longed to be with each other. If I were to talk about love, would I really want to disturb the healing of a broken heart by delving back into the archives of the past and expect you to listen? Paul, just give me the wink when I have to step down.
One or two more. He's got one or two more. Though.
Okay. This is actually, it's a nice little poem. I like this actually. It's called The Currency of Life. I realized I had won the lotto when I opened my eyes. I know you won't believe me, but I'm not one for telling lies. You see, it's the chirping of the birds that disturbs the sleeping branch, and the pitching of a high note that sends a currency of trance. It's the sun that beams its golden rays through my window pane, and a cloud with seams of silver lining that turns away the rain. It's the beauty in the rainbow still making promises of old, but in my hands I am the one holding nature's crock of gold. It's the voices of my children and the barking of my dogs. It's the choices that I'm free to make and the piling of fire logs. It's the swans that grace the Shannon River near the Corrigal Falls, and the lacing of the cannon guns to the old Limerick walls. Yes, each day I win the lotto, but each day I spend it all on the fluttering of butterflies or on a cuckoo's call. I spend it on a heartthrob that beats within my mother's heart, and the sadness of departure when it's time for us to part. The lotto is hereditary, inherited by all. I'm not going to lie to you. Wake up to nature's call. It's not a piece of paper, official dipped in ink. It's the currency of life, with the ability to think. I have won the lotto, the real one, that is true. And I share it every day with nature and with you. My trilogy, I taught the first one. gambling. Hello, Mr. Sucker. I'm your slot machine. Hello, Mr. Sucker. I'm your slot machine. I'm here to take your money and pick your pockets clean. I'll take away your self-respect, your dignity and pride, and when I've cleaned you out, I'll screw you up inside. I'll show you all my aces, my kings and gracious queens, my pokers, runs and flushes. I'll send you foolish dreams. I'll make you wish we've never met. There's nothing you can do. I'm just a mean machine, made for fools like you. Next one is cigarettes. I was once a fresh green leaf, no worries, no regrets. But now I'm trapped inside a box, they call me cigarettes. I find it hard to breathe in here, I'm screaming, let me out. And when you do, you light me up and put me in your mouth. I was once a fresh green leaf, no threat to anyone. But now I'm trapped inside your lungs, my life has just begun. I strive to make your breathing hard. I make you cough and choke. I block up all your arteries. I tell you, I'm no joke. I get revenge for all the times you put me in your mouth. I let you breathe me in, but you'll never blow me out. I cast a shadow deep and wide far across your chest. And listen to you gasp for air until your last request. You were once so fine and strong. No worries, no regrets. But now you're trapped inside a box because of cigarettes. Feelings run high when drink is taken, and many a man will fall. Many a life is badly shaken, and often ideas run tall. Many a bill is left unpaid, and many a child forgotten. Many a row, many a tear with drink, life can be rotten. Feelings run low when pockets are empty, and friends are hard to find. Life could be full, happy and plenty, instead it's so unkind. So have a drink and celebrate that miserable life ahead. Or leave that glass and go on home, rebuild your life instead. Rebuild your life to what it was before you touched the drop. Feelings on high, feelings on low. Now's the time to stop. Thank you very much.